Truth Seekers, Spider-Man here on the Nova M Radio Network. Hi, my name is Mike Malloy, and if there are any screw-ups tonight, it will be because I've got an awful lot of meds in me right now, most of which were delivered IV. Tuesday was an interesting day. I went on the air Tuesday night after having been stung by probably a brown recluse or a black widow. One of the two. It was very, very, very bad. And woke up yesterday morning, and it was bad enough to go to an emergency room in Atlanta. And this is just in response to all the emails. Had a lot of drugs shot in IV, and of course by then it had developed into cellulitis. So I'm sitting here tonight with a very, very, very swollen left arm. If for any reason in the second or third hour you hear something that sounds like a repeat, it'll be because I've had to go lie down. So that's what happened. Got to learn when I do that kind of work to wear long sleeve shirts and gloves from now on. But I'll tell you what, true seekers, you know, when your blood pressure comes up 96 over 50, it's time to go, whoa, and head for the ER. So anyway, our lead story tonight, a paper in the United Kingdom, The Sun, which is one of Murdoch's, reports that Madonna has hired Paul McCartney's divorce attorney, Fiona Shackleton, which are furthering the rumors that Madonna and her husband, Guy Ritchie, are going to split. Madonna, now, you may not know this, has a fortune estimated to be worth about £300 million, which would be about $450 million. It's understood she's seeking legal advice on a possible divorce from her husband of 7 years. The film director, he said without choking, Guy Ritchie. Now, Mrs. Shackleton, is the lawyer of choice for the rich and famous after what was regarded as a spectacularly well-handled split of Sir Paul from Heather Mills. Heather was rumored to be pushing for $120 million, but all she got was $36 million. Miss Shackleton is called the Steel Magnolia for her tough but pragmatic negotiations. I can't read this, Kathy. Tactics. She acted for the Prince of Wales in his divorce. And yesterday, Madonna's spokesman refused to comment on the claims. Oh, by the way, The Sun reports that Madonna and Guy sleep in separate rooms. And in May, Madonna and Guy walked to the red carpet together at Cannes, having rarely been spotted as a couple, and stories flew that the pair was living a civilized separation. Well, this is very, very disturbing news.
How many times did that spider bite you?
This is very disturbing news. Laugh if you will. Make light of my reportage if you will, Miss Smarty
Pants. Do you have anything about Lindsay Lohan? Because, you know, I missed E! Tonight.
No, Suzanne sent me that little item, and she said, I don't know, there was something about her email. Most of it was in capital letters, so I think Suzanne was freaked out when she sent it to me. Jesus, that stuff gets reported. I've been asked to mention a website to you. I have not had time to go there, but Karen and Al sent this in to me. The website is GiveMeLiberty.org/revolution. GiveMeLiberty.org/revolution. Karen and Al write, it's a site that starts to address all the infractions that have been allowed to run over the Constitution and gives us a way to peacefully stand up for our rights. It's going to be a movement that officially starts on June 30th. So please check it out and see if you can help spread the word. Well, I haven't had time to check it out. Well, I've had time, but I haven't been upright enough to check it out yet. So I'll just pass it on now. Give me, I haven't been there. It may be some crazed, I don't know. No offense to Karen and Al. I'm just saying, you know, when somebody says, go to this website, before I announce it, I usually do check it out. So I don't know what you're going to find, but it sounds good. GiveMeLiberty.org/revolution. GiveMeLiberty.org/revolution. And that'll be your assignment for tonight, Truth Seekers. If you check that out, let me know in just a couple of words if it's, is it real or is it not real? You know, is this something real or not real? The Presidential Memorial Commission of San Francisco is planning to ask voters on November 4th to change the name of a prize-winning water treatment plant on the pristine Pacific Ocean shoreline. They're going to rename it the George W. Bush Sewage Plant. Now, we all know that Lincoln has his memorial, Reagan has his highway and an airport, Washington has the Capitol and a state, too. But Bush may soon be the only president to have a memorial named after him that you can contribute to from your toilet. Huh? Unnamed sources in the Memorial Commission who are organizing this are claiming they have plenty of signatures to qualify the initiative for the ballot. And they claim the renaming would fit a long and proud American tradition of poking political figures in the eye or whatever orifices you fancy to choose. Brian McConnell, an organizer who regularly suits up as Uncle Sam to solicit signatures, said, most politicians tend to be narcissistic and egomaniac, so it's important for satirists to help define their history rather than letting politicians define their own history. I like that. I like that. Now, regardless of the proposed measure's outcome, whether it wins or loses, supporters plan to commemorate the inaugural with what is referred to as a synchronized flush of hundreds of thousands of toilets. That would send a flood of water and other substances toward the plant, currently named the Oceanside Water Pollution Control Plant. Now, this was tried once before. This flushing trick was played in the early 60s at the U.S. Army's Academy in West Point, New York, and it blew out the main sewer line, which took 3 weeks to repair. So we'll see. I think it's good, though. A sewage treatment plant. That's apropos for Chucklenuts, I think. But then again, Media Matters notes that on his radio show yesterday, the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, told a caller that, quote, Democrats will bend over, grab the ankles, and say, have your way with me to African Americans and gays. Here's how it went down. The caller said, hello, I want to know how the Republicans don't need Christians and conservatives, and they think we're 30%. Oh, she was a Christian and a Republican. I want to know how the Republicans don't need Christians and conservatives, and they think we're just 30%. 12% black people in the population, 10% they claim homosexuals in the population. Rush, honey, when did 30% get to be a small number? Limbaugh. I don't. I think it's actually larger than 30%, but let me see if I get your question right. You want to know why the Republicans are willing to say screw you to 30% or more of their voters, and yet Democrats will bend over, grab the ankles, and say, have your way with me for 10% and 2% of the population? Caller. Yes. Limbaugh said, these kooks, and I'm not talking about just the blacks. I'm talking about a whole kook fringe base. They have influence because they have money. In addition to the money aspect of this, there's the anti-war kook fringe, and it's huge. From MoveOn.org to Think Progress to My Facebook or whatever these things, they say, well, maybe not My Space or Face, whatever it is. Limbaugh complained that these kooks have too much influence on the left. And this is coming from the far right's preeminent smear artist, a man who is, as John McCain says, a voice, my friends, that is respected by a lot of people, who are in our Republican Party. Now, how about that? And I'm not talking about just the blacks. Just the blacks. The blacks. Interesting choice of words, you pig.
I can't believe they hate my show. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm concentrated pile of human waste. Because I'm a Nazi. I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right. You're being scammed. I'm a Nazi.
Over the seas, and you make all your animals deals, and your wise men don't know how it feels. To be thick as a brick.
Psst. You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers, it'll be our secret.
They're all swept away. In the tidal destruction.
21 past the hour. Big news today regarding Colin Powell. He is considering breaking away from his beloved Republican Party and supporting Senator Barack Obama. That's according to the traitorous dog, media whore number one, Robert Novak. Yeah, it's changed. Novak said Powell probably will enter Obama's camp at a time of his own choosing. Now, Novak doesn't qualify as media whore number one. I take that back. Novak is just a hack writer who, for some reason, Chicago Sun-Times still employs. You notice you never see him anymore. You notice that? Novak has disappeared. Powell has been with the Republican Party for 13 years following his retirement from the Army. And that may be over. The National Security Advisor for Ronald Reagan, that was Powell, remember that? He left the Bush crime family bitter about being ushered out of the State Department a year earlier than he wanted to. You didn't know that, did you? Neither did I. I didn't know that he got cashiered. Well, he was another one. He was just not rabid enough, not enough of a true believer to satisfy Cheney. So they got rid of him and brought in someone who was. The super tanker lady. Now, the question, Powell is going to back Barack Obama and join his team. The question is, why would Barack Obama have anything to do with this guy? He's a goddamn liar and an absolute suck-up to power, no matter how corrupt it is. Barack Obama ought to look at him and just say, no thanks, appreciate it, General, go away. I've already gone through this with the Reverend. I'm not going to go through it with you. Can you see the Republicans? Can you see the 527 ads? I feel like I'm naming off different styles of Levi's. But the 517, 5249, whatever the hell they are, those political ads that, well, I have nothing to do with that. I'm the candidate. But, you know, the issue ads. Can you see an issue ad made up of Colin Powell sitting in the United Nations lying to the whole world? Telling lie after lie, drawing those little goddamn diagrams. Look, there they are behind the palm tree. No, here they are in this box. No, over here behind the cave. No, right here. Here they are in this man's house. No, over here. Make a video like that and then connect Powell to Obama, right? Oh, that'll work. Jesus. Hey, look, Brock, tell him to take a walk. Wait a minute. What am I saying? Barack Obama is turning out to be more of a Republican than Colin Powell ever hoped to be. Screw it. Take him on, Barack. Yeah, make him, I don't know. How about Secretary of State? Now, the debate over how the Bush administration has conducted its warrantless wiretapping program is nearing its legislative end. You know, the FISA thing, the thing that... Who was it? Come on, Mike. Come on. Forget the drugs. Russ Feingold and Christopher Dodd were attempting to filibuster, and they couldn't sustain the filibuster because there were enough votes to cut off cloture. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight, I think. What else have we got on the menu for you? Oh, a moment with Bob. As a matter of fact, we'll probably do a moment with Bob after the next break. Well, all right, let me just see if I can squeeze this in. The Senate today voted overwhelmingly to advance that FISA Act, which is the end of what a lot of people refer to as a fierce battle over civil liberties and national security. Oh, bat squeeze, a fierce battle, my ass. This has been going on in Congress for more than 3 years now. And yet, for all the political passions this issue engendered, the fight over FISA ended with something of a whimper. The final product, the compromise, gives chucklenuts wide authority to monitor terrorist suspects and collect communications from U.S. citizens without review. It also gives telecommunications companies that helped with the previously illegal program immunity from lawsuits. In the end, only 15 senators, 15, were willing to try procedural tactics as a last-ditch effort to hold up the legislation. Here are those who voted against cloture, who voted to keep it going. Biden, Boxer, Brown, Cantwell, Dodd, Durbin, Feingold, Harkin, Kerry, Lautenberg, Leahy, Menendez, Sanders, Schumer, and Wyden. Those are the only, out of 100 senators, 85 of them said, screw the Constitution, we'll take the wiretapping. The Fourth Amendment is now dead. Now, for the White House and the majority party in the Senate, or the majority of the Senate, the FISA compromise has been hailed as a political breakthrough. Republican Senator Kit Bond told the New York Times, quote, I think the White House got a better deal than even they had hoped to get, end quote. Obama, a reluctant supporter of the bill, said he would work to strip telecom immunity from its language. Sure you will. However, he also said, quote, my view of FISA has always been that the issue of the phone companies per se is not the one that overrides the security interests of the American people, end quote. You know what that means? That means that lawbreaking made legal by an act of Congress is okay with Barack Obama. Think about that. About 26 before the hour, you can tell by the music, it is time once again for A Moment with Bob. In today's episode, Bob starts out by saying, hey, Mike. The question is, why does the leadership and the majority of the so-called opposition party support the policies of a president who has the lowest presidential approval rating in history? Policies, in this instance, is a convenient catch-all word representing the ongoing high crimes and misdemeanors of the Bush regime. The leadership and the majority of the opposition party have consistently approved every single dollar that funds the illegal war and occupation in Iraq, even though the Senate Intelligence Committee released the report stating that Bush, Cheney, and other administration officials lied the United States into that war. The leadership and the majority of the opposition party, including their presumptive nominee for the presidency, refused to consider impeachment, even though George W. Bush admitted to breaking the law by authorizing a secret domestic spying program. The leadership and the majority of the opposition party, including their presumptive nominee for the presidency, actively support sacrificing the rule of law and the Fourth Amendment. And perhaps most ominously, regardless of the National Intelligence Estimate report released in December 2007, which found that Iran had halted its nuclear weapons development program in 2003, so-called liberal members of the opposition party are enthusiastically supporting a new resolution that is tantamount to declaring that the president should pursue a naval blockade against Iran, which would be an act of war. Wow. That's some opposition party we've got. We worked so hard to put them in office a couple of years ago, and then they almost immediately betrayed us. Why? Well, I've come up with two possible scenarios that might explain why the Democrats turned into Vichy Democrats. Scenario one. This is the domestic spying operation authorized by George W. Bush, as described by Senator Chris Dodd. Quote, clear, first-hand whistleblower documentary evidence states that for year on end, every email, every text message, and every phone call carried over the massive fiber optic links of 16 separate companies routed through AT&T's Internet Hub in San Francisco, hundreds of millions of private domestic communications have been copied in their entirety by AT&T and knowingly diverted wholesale by means of multiple splitters into a secret room controlled exclusively by the National Security Agency, end quote. Within days after the 2006 elections, minions of the Bush regime under the direction of Dick Cheney visited key members of the Democratic Party and showed them their dossiers. Dossiers had to have been compiled on the opposition party. Richard Nixon authorized the bugging of the Democratic National Committee headquarters at the Watergate Hotel in 1972. Bush not only authorized the bugging of Democrats, but the rest of us American citizens as well. Why wouldn't the Bush regime use the information they had gathered to their advantage? And why wouldn't they use whatever damaging information they had found to blackmail members of the opposition party? As far as I can tell, that's one of the primary reasons Bush would authorize the domestic spying operation in the first place. But what if a Democrat wasn't vulnerable to blackmail? Wouldn't the next step be to threaten the Democrat's family, friends, or even house pets? That's a nice little doggy you've got there, Ms. Pelosi. Impeachment's off the table unless you want something very bad to happen to Mr. Puddles. So what's a threatened Democrat going to do? Run to a Justice Department that was run by Alberto Gonzalez or currently by Michael Mukasey? These are the guys that think torture is okay, remember? When gangsters control the executive and judicial branches of government, well, there's not a hell of a lot you can do to protect yourself during these strange times. The government of the United States has set up puppet regimes and political parties in countries around the globe. Is it that much of a stretch to imagine a puppet opposition party set up domestically? Perhaps the Bush regime has resorted to blackmail or threatened assassinations in order to ensure a compliant opposition party. I wouldn't put it past them. They are, after all, gangsters. Scenario 2. This one is perhaps more probable, but equally demoralizing. The leadership and the majority of the opposition party is as corrupt and power-hungry as the Bush regime. They willingly allowed the destruction of our system of checks and balances because they wanted to inherit the powers of the imperial presidency as established by the Bush regime. When Barack Obama announced that he supported the warrantless eavesdropping and telecom amnesty compromise, he said, quote, so I support the compromise, but do so with a firm pledge that as president, I will carefully monitor the program, review the report by the inspectors general, and work with the Congress to take any additional steps I deem necessary to protect the lives and the liberty of the American people, end quote. We do not want George W. Bush, Barack Obama, or any president of the United States to carefully monitor the program. We want the president to restore the Fourth Amendment and protect the Constitution of the United States. That's his goddamn job! Regardless of how we got here, either the comic book-like Scenario 1 or the depressing Scenario 2, the two-party system is dead. To paraphrase Monty Python, it's passed on. The two-party system is no more. It has ceased to be. It's expired and gone to meet its maker. It's a stiff, bereft of life. It rests in peace. Its metabolic processes are now history. It's kicked the bucket, shuffled off this mortal coil, run down the curtain, and joined the bleeding choir invisible. This is an ex-two-party system. We either accept that fact and figure out what we're going to do about it or continue wasting time being regularly shocked, stunned, and amazed when the opposition party caves in once again to the Bush regime. For wisdom and solution, we can turn to Gore Vidal. Quote, I've been saying for the last 1,000 years there's only one party in the United States, the property party. which essentially is corporate America. And it has two right wings, Republican and Democrat. Republicans are a bit stupider, more rigid, more doctrinaire in their laissez-faire capitalism than the Democrats, who are cuter, prettier, a bit more corrupt, until recently, and more willing than the Republicans to make small adjustments when the poor, the black, the anti-imperialists get out of hand. But, essentially, there is no difference between the two parties. And his solution? Well, the tactic would be to go after smaller offices, state by state, school board, sheriff, state legislature. You can turn them around, and that doesn't take much of anything. Take back everything at the grassroots, starting with state legislatures. That sounds like a whole lot of work, doesn't it? Hard work that won't pay off for years, the kind of work most of us had grown accustomed to not doing. As Ted Rall concluded in his article, Oops, Nation, a superpower of lazy slobs, quote, some Americans are good, other Americans are bad, and the good ones are often lazy, willing to let the bad ones get their way. Regards, Bob. And thus ends another episode of A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. When will the next moment with Bob occur? Who knows? All right, if you want your own personal copy of tonight's A Moment with Bob, it'll be listed at MikeMalloy.com when this program terminates this evening. Oh, Jesus, don't use that word when you've been bitten by it. Oh, you want a video representation? It'll be up tomorrow, I guess, if it gets past the censor. The video that we shot this afternoon, you can actually see what a brown recluse or whatever the hell it was bitten arm looks like, because we did a video. It's very self-indulgent, and I deeply apologize. But, for those of you who have access to the video section, the Founders Club members, you will see this sucker in all its entirety tomorrow. All, 3 minutes of it? So that should be up tomorrow if it gets past the boss. Here's a headline you never wanted to see. Family wiped out by U.S., This is from today. A U.S. airstrike on suspected insurgents at Tikrit went terribly wrong yesterday when an American missile instead killed a family of six, including four children, aged 4 to 11. Iraqis allege that the man of the house had come out of his house and fired a gun in the air because he was afraid that thieves were in the area. The U.S. military apparently thought he was firing at them and called in a strike on his house. This sort of thing is why the Iraq public wants a status of forces agreement, a SOFA, between the Iraqi government and the U.S. to ensure that U.S. forces can only deploy force with the agreement of the Iraqi government. Family wiped out by U.S. Family of six, four children. I'm sure that the U.S. government, in the representation of at least a colonel stationed in Iraq, will issue the standard, "We deeply apologize," and someone like Josh Bolton will tell his friends, "That's goddamn collateral damage. So what? They're just little, Arab kids anyway. Who cares? Who cares?" We're going to pay for this, truth seekers, for a long, long time. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Ten before the hour, in addition to the family of six, including four children aged between 4 and 11 and mom and dad, killed in a U.S. jet missile attack yesterday. A roadside bomb killed three American soldiers and an interpreter north of Baghdad yesterday. Three more American soldiers killed today. I believe the three today were in Afghanistan. The deaths brought the number of U.S. troops killed in Iraq this week to 7, and U.S. troops killed in both areas to 10. And all of this was completely unnecessary. And Nancy Pelosi says impeachment's off the table. All of this killing, think about this. Even you war lovers out there, how do you not just justify this to yourself? I mean, do you really, really, really think that this slaughter of innocents is somehow protecting the United States? You can't be that insane. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, you can. But you're wrong. You know, doing something like this, slaughtering people like this, you people who are religious, you people who believe in God and heaven and hell and afterlives and rewards and punishments and so on and so forth, how do you justify this? Do you just write it off and say, well, you know, some things, Mike, just can't be understood. You know, they're God's plan. God's plan. Well, if this is your stinking God, I wish the U.S. Air Force would blow him away, too, or her, or it. Well, that's right. The Christian God is a him. So is the Jewish guy. Well, so is the Islamic guy. It's all the same guy. What am I talking about? But what? It just continues. It just keeps going. More children, more wedding parties, more workers, more people being tortured. All of this for nothing. It was lies. God damn it. It was lies. Doesn't anybody understand that? In the Democratic Party leadership, it was all lies. Every single death rests on a lie. Son of a bitch. And we just go about our business. Oh, yeah. Six people killed? Oh. Kids? Yeah, well, we'll apologize. It'll be okay. We'll apologize. It'll be okay. You know, I'm usually cruising along with my usual level of balance somewhere between outrage and comedy, and then I see a story like that. Family wiped out. Because the guy came out and fired his gun at what he thought were people trying to break into his house. U.S. Supreme Court today ruled that in Washington, D.C., it is no longer legal to ban guns, handguns. If someone rushes out of his or her house in Washington, D.C. and starts firing at suspected burglars or whatever, maybe from the nearest Air Force base that you... Oh, what am I talking about? Terrible story. Terrible story. There are two resolutions working their way through Congress, one in the Senate, one in the House, you need to know about. They're both acts of war. The House resolution calls for that naval blockade of Iran. It is, we mentioned this the other night, House Resolution 362. Got to do something to stop this. On the other hand, why waste your time? I'm just telling you about it. If we can't depend on the Congress of the United States, either House, to stand up for the Fourth Amendment, how in the hell are we going to get them to stop an act of war? Since the introduction of this resolution 2-3 weeks ago, it has attracted 146 co-sponsors, the ones to set up a naval blockade against Iran, an outright act of aggression and war in violation of the UN Charter, in violation of just about every international agreement concerning trade on the books anywhere. 43 members of the House have added their names to the bill in the past 2 days. In the Senate, a sister resolution, number 580, has gained co-sponsors with similar speed. The Senate measure was introduced by Indiana Democrat Evan Bayh. In little more than a week's time, it has accrued 19 co-sponsors. Democrats are doing this. You understand that? You understand that? Democrats are doing this. Daniel Stone, who sent this to me, says, since Cheney and Bush are unable to generate sufficient interest among the American people for an attack on Iran, the project seems to have been passed to the Congress to get us into another illegal, unnecessary, and immoral attack on a relatively defenseless nation. We should not permit U.S. aggressions and provocations of any kind. No aerial attacks, no ground attacks, no naval blockades, no sanctions. The Iranians are within their rights to produce nuclear energy. And the statements on congressional resolutions 580 and 362 are false and misleading. But we have an opposition party, as a moment with Bob pointed out clearly, that doesn't care or is part of the problem. And you know it's the latter. So what are we going to do? What's the President Obama going to do? As I asked in my mini blog today that's posted at novamradio.com, surely, as soon as President Obama takes office, all of this stuff will be turned upside down, rescinded, and done away with. The idea of unitary government will disappear, and all will be right with the world. Right? Right? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Right? Program on Nova M Radio. And I think Suzanne in L.A. has been hitting the hookah a little bit tonight, but here's what she writes. Oh, my God, Mike. Can't you see it? Oh, under the subject, spider bite, it's a sign. Oh, my God, Mike, can't you see it? It's so very clear to me. You have become preordained, chosen, the preordained chosen. Let us begin again. The subject line is spider bite. It's a sign. Oh my God, Mike. Can't you see it? It's so very clear to me. Mm-hmm. You have become the preordained chosen one to rid our country of all the accumulated evil and debauchery of the past 7 years. Your blood pressure will return to normal, the swelling in your arm will go down, and then you'll realize a tremendous surge of insight and power. Your metabolism will then begin racing, and you will assume the strength and endurance of a 20-year-old triathlete. Sometime tomorrow, before the weekend, and certainly before the 4th of July, you will zoom to the nation's capital and spin a thick, sticky, spidery web around the entire city, entrapping all but the 15 brave senators. Our glorious buildings and landmarks will remain intact, but all the craven monsters who masquerade as our representatives will perish. and we will begin again. Only this time we'll be successful, and you will return to your beloved Georgia mountains, contented knowing you have your nation's gratitude for a job well done. Suzanne in L.A. Jesus, Suzanne, I'll send you my address. Mail me some of whatever you're smoking, sweetie. Woo! She sold that plot to a production company in L.A. a few years ago, and it was made into a movie. Turo, 62. I wish you people would give me at least a name regarding what we've been talking about. I guess what Bob said about they're good Americans and bad Americans, and the good ones are primarily lazy. Turo writes, true, Mike, there are an awful lot of very lazy Americans who simply don't want to get involved, but there are also a lot of basically good Americans who either don't have the time or are just too damn scared to raise their voices at obvious outrages by our beloved unitary executive. Hell, people are afraid to send an email that's not 100% pro-Bush Cheney. These sweethearts are spying on all of our correspondences, i.e. we are already in at least a pre-fascist bully state. I mean, you have to have steel cojones to really get involved. Most of my acquaintances at work and the few friends I have are annoyed when I try to point out the fact that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are almost gone and have almost become interesting curiosities. I bet you 90% of Americans only have a vague understanding of habeas corpus and the Fourth Amendment. They don't realize it's the guts of this country. Yeah. And this one is from Earl, who lives in the Georgia mountains. He writes, Mike, well, today's Supreme Court decision gives us the right to possess firearms with regulation of sorts, so we will be armed when the day to take our country back finally rolls around. Since the Democrats have turned their backs on me and others who believe in the Constitution, it will happen sooner or later. I probably won't be around to see it, but it's going to happen because the U.S. is definitely a pro-fascist country now. I keep hoping someone who is filthy rich will turn his or her fortune over to promote a third party that has just one promotion, and that is to give the country, through restoring the Constitution, back to the people. If it could sweep up these dissatisfied Democrats and what were good Republicans, who are well-known politicians like Kucinich and so forth, to anchor it, the country could start to work again. I know that there are a few Republicans that are not criminals, but I believe there are a few Democrats that are not the same way. Maybe 12 Democrats in the Senate are not really Republican fascists. I think this vote on the FISA bill actually showed that Obama is nothing more than a great talking shyster. I lost all faith in him and will not support him any longer. The Democratic Party is not the party with my best interests at heart anymore. I've decided that a vote for the least of the two evils is nothing but enabling my country to be fully taken over by the enemy. That leaves me to choose from third parties that have not a chance in hell of winning. But maybe if enough people do not look the other way and hold their nose, the Democrats will defeat themselves. I don't think the Democrats, and I know the Republicans, don't give a damn about our country unless it is to give them elitist power or more wealth. The best thing is to be like the old mountain people used to be, and that is, if you are wronged, you do not forget. You look for justice. Even if it takes all your life and is passed down to your children, if justice doesn't come in your lifetime, sometimes justice in their code is just vengeance. Those who take from you are taken from. Those Bible thumpers know it is written throughout their good book. If do unto others as you want done unto you will not work, then do unto them as they have done unto you. But make the reply so much worse that they will never attempt it again. It is not nice, but it works. It is kind of like the nuclear option. Don't support them that do not support you. As I see it, the Democratic Party will no longer support my ideas. If they're not willing to work for me in the last few days, I'm not willing to work for their agenda. Earl. I've been getting a lot of comments like that. I'm pretty close to that point of view, too. You know, the arguments that come in, or the points of view that come in the emails, that say, well, Mike, you know, for God's sake, you know, if you've lost faith in the Democratic Party, okay, that's your problem. But don't talk about it on the air, because what happens on the Supreme Court if we get a Republican president, a John McCain? Oh, I understand. But as I pointed out several times, you already know this. The last two extreme right neo-Nazi justices were confirmed by Democrats. The Democrats could have stopped it, and they didn't. Okay, so that kind of screws that argument right to the wall. You shouldn't send that argument into me, because that makes me believe that you are dumber than a sack of doorknobs if you don't understand that John Roberts and Sammy the Fish Alito were put there by Democrats. They could have stopped those two appointments. They did not. They facilitated those two appointments. So please stop sending me emails telling me, oh, Mike, but if McCain is president, we'll have fascists on the Supreme Court. Where have you been? The Supreme Court now is one vote away from overturning 70 years of social progress in this country. Well, that's a reason not to vote for McCain. Do you think a Democrat, do you think President Obama is going to nominate a liberal in the mold of, say, a William Douglas? Do you think that will ever happen again? Do you think the United States Senate, you think the Republicans will allow a liberal to be confirmed? If there's only 40 Republicans in the U.S. Senate, given the fact that there are another 20 or 30 so-called blue dog Democrats, there are enough votes to cut off any debate about it. And, you know, Adolf Hitler could get a place on the U.S. Supreme Court. Matter of fact, the Republicans would cheer such a nomination. So what do you do? What do you do? Huh? I don't know. I'm wrestling with it. I'm like, who wrestled with the devil? Was that Saul? No. Was it Saul? Who wrestled with the devil? Jacob. Was it Jacob? George Bush has lifted some of the sanctions against North Korea. Have you heard about this? Yeah, he had a press briefing. Not a press briefing, but he came out and gave a little speech this morning. He says that the country is no longer a state sponsor of terrorism. And, you know, when I listened to his speech today, I thought, son of a bitch, ExxonMobil has discovered a huge oil field off the coast of North Korea. And I'll bet you dollars to donut holes that that's exactly what has happened. North Korea was the perfect booger man in the Far East. We can't have China as a booger man anymore because China owns us. But there was North Korea. Perfect, perfect. All of a sudden, because they are going to publicly demolish a concrete cooling tower tomorrow that they have already begun to deconstruct, and it's going to be, all the visuals are going to be there. They invited CNN, NBC, all the networks are going to watch the tower come down. Oil off the coast of North Korea. Count on it.
Bush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
Now, baby, back in leaving trunk, you know we've got to leave today. Just exactly where we're going, I cannot say, but
it is 21 past the hour. We're going to take some phone calls here in a moment, so if you want to get online, the number is 800-989-1480. And that website that I asked you to check, apparently it's a Ron Paul-inspired website, which, you know, could be interesting. You can check it out if you are so inclined. Anyway, email from Prairie 2, who writes, subject line is calling it what it is. Hey, Mike, the stock market took another big drop today. The headlines blamed oil, but buried in the news was the reality. The investment banks are about to tank. The Federal Reserve pumped hundreds of billions into these white elephants after the subprime crisis, but the Band-Aid is not going to hold much longer. The clearinghouse for all central banks worldwide has issued a report that makes no bones about it. They are calling it what it is, a depression, and they expect things to get dramatically worse. Soon all of us will be wishing we could spin a web and catch our own food. Prairie 2 is evil. All right, enough spider references now. Really? Jesus, I'm getting the creeps. Ew, is there anything down here under the desk? God. Yeah, the so-called lifting of sanctions, a couple of them, you know, against North Korea. It's incredible. You know, you create a straw man and then set him on fire and then say, look what I've done, huh? I put in my thumb and pulled out a plum. What a good boy am I. Woo! All right. How long ago was it that Bush was describing North Korea as part of an axis of evil? What the hell has North Korea done to change any of that? Not that I thought they were part of the axis of evil. Christ, they're not even an axis of being able to feed themselves, much less an axis of evil. What the hell evil? What? What are you talking about? Half a century ago, they, you know, wobbled over the 38th parallel and attacked their brethren in the South. You saw what happened on that deal. Yeah, we're still technically at war with them. That's what happened. Axis of evil. And 2 years, about less than 2 years ago, the North Koreans exploded a small nuclear device. So, Chucklenuts today said if the North Koreans will do an action for action process. I wonder who gave him that term. An action for action process. You tear down your nuclear plant cooling tower and we will lift sanctions. You stop with the goddamn military parades and we will send you huge boxes of Cheerios to feed your starving population. Anyway, this document where the North Koreans, you know, said the equivalent, diplomatic equivalent of kick me, beat me, flay me. Yes, I'm a terrible, terrible man. My name is Kim Il Crazy. I know I'm crazy. Everyone in my country knows I'm crazy. America knows I'm crazy. Okay, just give me some children to eat and a big train to go to Moscow again, and I'll be okay. Where do I sign? So he signed the thing and handed over to the Chinese officials in Beijing. The report, according to reports, details aspects of North Korea's plutonium production and other parts of its nuclear program. Now, some important points were left out of this agreement, such as a full accounting of weapons and the country's efforts to enrich uranium. You know, the kind of stuff that we're insisting on Iran. Iran, for Christ's sake! Iran! The best ally the United States could have had in Southwest Asia. Iran. Right between Afghanistan and Iraq, Iran could have been a tremendous asset and ally. Pakistan and Afghanistan are about to go up in flames. And then you have this schmuck in North Korea, whom we have now decided, well, you're no longer an axis of evil. Those goddamn Iranians are, but not you. Hey, guess what? Hi, here we go. Sign the document. Why? What have the North Koreans done? Nothing. Well, then what? Oil. Oil. You watch! Off the coast of North Korea, all of a sudden, within 6 months. Got to give it a little time so that the average Joe Sixpack in this country can't make the connection. No longer axis of evil, oil. Click, click, click. Oh, no, give me a beer. You watch. 6 months from now. Oil! Biggest oil field since, Iran, Iraq, someplace. provisions of the Trading with the Enemy Act were lifted today by proclamation, which means American businesses can now start feeding the hungry millions in that sad, sad country. How soon before there will be a McDonald's opening up in downtown Pyongyang, huh? Well, Christiane Amanpour will be there with her camera crew to show us the fun. And we'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy, and your phone calls. Stay with us.
And I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It is indeed 25 before the hour. One last thing about the lifting of sanctions on North Korea. And again, it's a big story. Should be getting tremendous treatment, but it's another one of those hokum stories. It really is, and it has to do with oil, has to do with nothing about diplomacy, nothing about all of a sudden George Bush wants to make nice with Kim Il-crazy. That's just not going to happen. So it's, you know, he was ordered by Cheney to do this. So, one good thing about George, he takes orders from his superiors. But the lifting of sanctions, according to the Washington Post today, the lifting of these sanctions worries Japan. And as written in today's post on the website, Japan has strongly argued that North Korea should be classified as a terrorist state until it comes clean on its abduction of Japanese citizens during the 70s and 80s. Yeah, I can never figure out what that was all about. They kidnapped Japanese people to do what? Was that in retaliation for the Japanese using Korean women as so-called comfort women during World War II? I don't know. But anyway, there's still 8 missing Japanese whom North Korea has acknowledged kidnapping. It's become an obsession in Japan, kind of like the MIA issue in the United States. And I'm not disparaging the MIA issue. I'm just... God, never mind. In Japan, according to the Post, politicians cannot afford to be perceived as neglecting the issue. And the Japanese government has placed tough economic sanctions of their own on North Korea and cut off all food and energy aid. So now how to respond to that? Bush today said, "We will never forget the abduction of Japanese citizens." That's a quote. Oh, well, that's really assuring to the Japanese, right? Now, the guy who's the president of the Pacific Forum at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Honolulu said that the principal regional losers, if North Korea is removed from the terrorist list, it's a done deal, but trust me, Mr. Casa, would be Japan and the image of the United States in Japan. And then he adds, the U.S. is now seen as less reliable than it has been for years. Really? I'll be damned. I wonder why. Anyway, Bush telephoned Japanese Prime Minister Yasuo Fukuda yesterday to tell him that the United States remains concerned about the abduction issue. But Fukuda, who is already unpopular and whose ruling party could lose control of the government in an election next year, may have to pay a high political price for the Bush administration's deal with North Korea. So what? You know, another government destabilized and collapsing because of this crazy son of a bitch in the White House because of his actions? Pyong Jin-il, an expert on North Korean issues, said, quote, Japanese sentiment has made this such an emotional issue. The Japanese people will be looking coldly at the United States and its moves. And Minoru Morita, a political analyst in Tokyo, said, quote, if America decides for itself, there's nothing we can do. This move by the U.S. will probably light a small fire to Japanese nationalism and anti-Americanism. Oh, come on, guys. God damn it, there's oil involved here. Come on. We were just kidding. Hey, we whipped your ass once. You want it again? Huh? You want it again? You want a couple more bombs down your chimneys? Where? Nagasaki and Hiroshima? Huh? Do you? Do you? Do you? Get off my case. I'm President of the United States. I'm the decider. Jesus, what a guy. What a guy. I don't even want to get into the ruling by the Supreme Court. It's the first ruling on the Second Amendment in nearly 70 years. So now that they've ruled that it's unconstitutional for the District of Columbia to have a gun ban, strict gun ban, Chicago will be next. I told you that story when I got to Chicago with my guns, and the cop called my program one night and said, Mike, you can't have guns in the city of Chicago. I can't? No. Well, anyway, Scalia did say, like most rights, the Second Amendment right is not unlimited. It is not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever in any manner whatsoever and for whatever purpose. Oh, really, Fat Tony? Well, I'm sure that the gun-crazy people will listen to that and all of a sudden go turn in their street sweepers and their semi-automatic combat rifles and war weapons because you said that in ruling that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to protect a firearm unconnected with service in a militia and to use that arm for traditionally lawful purposes such as self-defense within the home. Quote, quote, quote. Okay. I have weapons, Fat Tony, to protect myself against people like you. Huh? And your crazy friend in the White House. No, not George. You look at him as some kind of a lap monkey. I'm talking about crazy Dick. All right, to your phone calls. We'll start with Mitch, who's calling from Los Angeles, listening on the Internet. You know we're on KTLK.
Yeah.
Mitch, yeah.
Yeah, Mike, how you doing?
Why don't you listen on the radio? I'm just curious.
Well, I just, KTLK, I just don't like listening. And they interrupt you for everything. Pelly Wings competition, you know, basketball, football, you know, chess. I mean,
chess.
You know, I mean, so I just try not to listen to them when I have a chance.
Oh, well.
Plus they have lousy reception.
Well, what you need to do is at least just turn it on in the background so when Arbitron calls, you can say, yeah, I'm listening to KTLK, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
All
there
right.
We go.
Okay.
Anyway, Mike, the reason I'm calling is last time we spoke was the second to last night at IE. So
yeah.
It's been quite a while since I called.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and we talked about the same thing, about going to the mattresses, man.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And I said it was great to be an outlaw in a society like this, and you know what? The game's over, man. You know, Obama's, like you say, it's the same thing. I'm going to vote for Nader. I mean, I believe what Nader said. He didn't mean nothing really bad by what he said. He was just saying, where is this guy trying to stand, you know?
Yeah.
This guy, you know what I mean? Where's his record, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Nader was the guy we should have voted for originally. And I mean, he's the only guy that really is a liberal, you know? And maybe the whole thing's got to go to hell. Maybe this country's got to be up to its eyes and blood before it'd be willing to make a change. And I think the Democrats, the reason these guys bend over so much is because, well, among the myriad of bills they've let pass and the people they've let into the Supreme Court is that Military Commissions Act.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're so afraid that if they corner Bush or they push him into a corner, that he's going to declare martial law, spend the Constitution and the elections, and he's going to lay it right in their lap. And they created their own monster. And they're afraid every time they get him where we could do some kind of damage, they seem to back off because they're just afraid that Cheney's going to go psychotic and do that. And then that trumps everything. And then we really go to war. And then maybe the young people will be involved. And that's the only way things are going to change, you know? I think we've already lost. Like, yeah, you know, and now the best we can do is like, you know, like George Carlin says, is watch the show, you know.
Grab a bowl of popcorn, sit back and watch the show. Huh?
Yeah, watch it all fall apart, man. He says because he says it sure is going to be entertaining, and it really is. You know, I mean, we got to stop taking it so seriously. Maybe the end of the world it could be a pretty good movie if we could sit back and watch it with a little detachment. Because it sure is going to be entertaining, that's for sure. Anyway, Mike, you sound like the devil itself there tonight. So, you know, give me
I sound like what?
the devil. You sound like your voice sounds real thick. Your head sounds real thick. You know, and you sound like you could be riffing off some people tonight and giving yourself a little bit of a break because boy, you're gonna feel like hell tomorrow when you wake up.
Oh yeah, well that's probably true too. I feel like hell just about every morning when I wake up though. At first, until I realize, hey, you're alive.
It's true, yeah. A lot of people didn't wake up this morning, you know. So we're doing better than them. Well, I think so. Well, I'm not quite sure, though.
I hear you.
Anyway.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. I appreciate you checking in, all right?
All right, man. You take care of yourself, Mike.
All right. You too. You too. We have an open line here, 800-989-1480. Sean is calling from Los Angeles, and he is listening on KTLK. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right.
First of all, this gentleman just reminded me of something. How's this for an insult? You get interrupted on KTLK for WNBA and Avengers football.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not why I called. The reason I called is when you mentioned about the Dems and the Supreme Court. Back in 1999 and 2003, I was screaming the only issue that matters is the Supreme Court.
Right.
Now, I blame the voters. They should have voted in droves just based on the Supreme Court for the Democratic candidate. So I blame the voters here. But when it comes to placing the real blame, when I think of the Supreme Court today, I scream at the Democrats who were in the Senate at the time because all that they needed to do was with 41 votes, they could have tabled any nomination and held out for something more moderate.
Sure, absolutely.
But they had no, shall we say, balls. They had nothing. They're just as wimpy then as they are now.
Yep.
Only now they have a wimpy leader in the House and in the Senate.
Yeah, sure they do. Hey, Sean.
Mike, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure's all mine. Take care, pal. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Learn, no, he never will learn. With our fate, he's unconcerned. He'll abide forever by our right to bear Uzis. He's a man who never will learn. Georgie's gun-loving minions always greet him when he visits, and they give him a dollar or two. And because of all the loopholes they have given 40 millions, it's insane, but sadly it's true. Oh, will he ever learn? No, he never will learn. With our fate, he's unconcerned. He will ride forever on the train of money. He's a man who never will learn.
Best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour, we're getting these calls from KTLK. Reminds me, I didn't even thank Johnny Wendell for sitting in for me last night on very short notice. Thanks, Johnny. Appreciate it. Didn't mean to dish you there by not saying thank you at the beginning of the program, but I'm on drugs, okay? Back to your phone calls. Jeff is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mike, how you feeling? Pretty rotten?
Yeah, fair to partly cloudy, you know.
Well, I was feeling pretty rotten when I listened to you a couple nights ago and you said that Nader was really just a liberal Democrat. And I had the opportunity to listen to him twice in person in 04, once on the Capitol steps here and once on the campus of the university. And both times I said to my wife, this is crazy, he'll never get elected. He puts it all on our shoulders. He wants us to be responsible for the Republic. But his policies were getting rid of GATT and NAFTA, normalization of relations with Cuba, out of Iraq, peace. Where he impinged on the Dems, he was unqualifiedly for a woman's right to control her reproductive system. The Democrats do back off. But not all of them, not everywhere, but he's consistent. It's easier for him. He doesn't have a constituency of withhold money. I think you need to think about what you were talking about, the Democrats. I used to be a Democrat. My wife was precinct committee woman, and I was a working hack until Lyndon Johnson cured me of it. And I really haven't taken them seriously since 64 when they fooled me for the last time.
Yeah.
So, I'm a Nader supporter, but I think the important thing we need to understand is that the voters have given evidence to the lie of the Democrat that Nader somehow cost them the presidency when their own pusillanimous nature and refusal to fight is what cost them the presidency when the Republicans stole it.
Well, I think that point has finally sunk in to an awful lot of Americans, although you still see the argument Nader stole the election from Gore.
Well, can I give you a couple of facts?
Yeah, go ahead. No, well, you're preaching to the choir, and most of the people listen to this program. You'd be preaching to the choir. We know.
Well, you know about New Hampshire then.
Yeah, Nader had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, Nader in 96, he ran a statewide write-in, and you have to vote even as a write-in on one of the parties.
Uh-huh.
And he got 2,400 votes as a Republican, and he got 2,000 votes from the Democrats. So, you know, he splits even. And in Florida, last time around, they did exit polling.
Yeah.
And all the people that said they had voted for Nader, they asked them, who'd you vote for last time? And 60% of those people said Ross Perot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm talking to the choir, and we're the disaffected.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think you should slime him. That's really slime.
I do what?
The guy is no Democrat. I was a moron.
No. All right. Now wait. Jeff.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
I think I don't have the transcript of the program in front of me because I don't do transcripts. But I think what I said was his positions on the issues are the positions of liberal Democrats.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure that's what I said. Maybe not. But
I think you said that.
Okay. Well, his positions.
But I don't think that's right. I think that's wrong. I think certainly GATT and NAFTA couldn't have come around without the Clinton.
Oh, wait.
They
weren't liberal Democrats. Stop, please.
Well, who the hell? Well, they all voted for it.
Well, they're Republican light. When I say, look, maybe you haven't been listening to the program that long. When I talk about liberal Democrats, I'm talking about the old coalition Democrats from starting in the 50s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Gaylord
for
Nelson.
Huh?
Gaylord Nelson.
Yeah, for about 30 years, the
Foxmire.
The coalition Democrats, and when
Frank
I
Church.
Say when I say somebody,
they're all gone, man.
When I say,
we've got Feingold.
When I say somebody is a liberal Democrat, I'm referencing, or when I talk about liberal Democrats, I'm referencing a different time frame. There are maybe 3 or 6 or 20 liberal Democrats in the entire House and Senate, the entire Congress,
yeah.
And the rest of the Democrats are no more liberal than I am George Bush's grandmother. So, I wasn't dissing Ralph Nader.
That's true.
I was saying that, to me, his positions represent those positions I remember as a young person that constituted the liberal Democratic position. That's all I meant. So
Now they're all Scoop Jackson.
Well, not Scoop Jackson.
Most of them are like Scoop Jackson.
Well, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I agree with you in the past. And like I say, Johnson cured a lot of us.
Well, yeah, of course he did. But we cured him, too.
And your screener let go of me, but not before saying, don't vote for Nader. I don't even think about the other guys, McCain and I listened. I listened to a full speech on religion from Obama, and I thought it was wonderful. But his politics still stink for me. I'm a vet for peace. I work actively in it. And our national office, about 2 years ago, put out a call, start organizing on impeachment. And we've got at least one guy who works full-time on it in the local, in Madison. So I don't have a problem politically. I just don't pay much attention to the Democrats and the Republicans and their promises.
How's that impeachment thing going?
The people would love it. The structure is not going to touch it.
Yeah.
And Mississippi, well, you know how many Democratic congresspersons it takes to change a light bulb? None. It's off the table.
It's off the table. Jeff, I got to leave it there.
Hey, take care. I hope you feel better. They're nasty, them spiders. I lived in Texas.
Yeah, well, Georgia is a close second. Thanks, Jeff. Behave yourself. No, I would never call Nader a liberal Democrat. I may have, but my intent was that his points of view, his positions, his position, policy issue, policy papers, and I may be totally, completely deluded into thinking that there was a time when Democrats were really that way. Maybe that's just fantasy land. Too many drugs, too many bottles of Jack Daniels, I don't know. Too many spider bites. All right, quick break. We'll be back. Don't go away. This is the Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. Your phone calls when we come back.
music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. Seven past the hour, the Malloy program here on Nova M Radio. I want to play for you. We're going to have much more of this tomorrow night. Didn't have time to get it all together today. But testimony today by the gruesome twosome, David Addington, who is the chief butt boy for Dick Cheney, and John Yoo, who is now a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, on what? Law professor? He's the one who wrote the memos exonerating preemptively George Bush and Dick Cheney and anyone else for advocating, permitting and promoting torture in violation of just about every damn law that's on the books, both foreign and domestic. So this was John Yoo, and this little bit of tape, or I'm sorry, this tape, this little bit of audio, you will hear you, thanks to Steve in L.A. who sent this to me, you will hear John Yoo debating whether or not Bush could order someone to be buried alive. Is that what it is, Kathy? Buried alive. And he's questioned by, is that Conyers? Okay, so this is the House Judiciary Committee? I think so. All right, here you go. Listen up.
Is there anything, Mr. Professor Yoo, that the president could not order to be done to a suspect if he believed it necessary for national defense?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that goes back to the quote you just read, because...
No, I'm just asking you the question. Maybe it does or doesn't, but what do you think?
I think it's the same question that I was asked.
Well, what's the answer?
Well, first, can I make clear I'm not talking about...
And you don't have to make anything clear. Just answer the question, counsel.
I just want to make sure I'm not saying anything.
You don't have to worry about not saying. Just answer the question.
Okay. My thinking right now.
Yes, right now.
Okay. My thinking right now.
This moment.
Yes. This moment, Mr. Chairman, is that, first, the question you're posing.
What is the answer?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to make you...
I get it. Okay.
Let me answer the question. I will answer the
question. No, you're wasting my time. Look, counsel, we've all practiced law. Hold it. Could the president order a suspect buried alive?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that I have ever...
I'm asking you that.
Given the advice that the president could bury somebody alive.
I didn't ask you if you ever gave him advice. I asked you, do you think the president could order a suspect buried alive?
Mr. Chairman, my view right now is that I don't think a president would, no American president would ever have to order that or feel it necessary to order that.
I think we understand the games that are being played.
The games that are being played. Thanks to Steve in L.A. who sent that in. We'll have more audio tomorrow night from these insane hearings today.
Yeah, and Addison, Addington, I mean, later in one of these hearings, I don't know if it was when Nadler was questioning him or Conyers or one of these guys, was stepping around and jumping and hemming and hawing about whether or not he authorized the torture of someone's children in front of them. Administration, you know, was that okay? And he wouldn't answer that either.
Jesus God. These two ought to be taken in chains to The Hague and put on trial. And also, breaking news, the Senate has just passed a $162 billion war spending plan, sending to President Bush legislation that will pay for operations in Iraq and Afghanistan until the next president takes office. It was approved 92-6. It does include a doubling of GI Bill college benefits for troops and veterans. I have to take a closer look at that part. It also provides a 13-week extension of unemployment benefits, 3 months, and $2.7 billion in emergency flood relief for the Midwest. The Senate, however, narrowly failed to approve a House-passed bill to cancel a scheduled cut in payments to doctors who treat Medicare. So look for Medicare patients. So look for problems, more problems for older Americans. Oh, well. Another $162 billion from the democratically controlled Congress. Back to your phone calls. Dave is calling from Dayton, Ohio, listening on the Internet. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I was watching that hearing today. What a piece of work those two are. I mean, Addington and you.
Yeah.
That's pretty scary.
I didn't watch it. I was, high on...
Yeah, I've been there. I wanted to say to you, too, make sure it's not something related to a tick, because I got a similar syndrome.
No, we know for sure it's not a tick. But,
okay.
I'm doing way too many... What is that I'm doing, Kathy?
Anti-inflammatories.
No, those are bad enough, but the antihistamines.
Yeah.
Try to reduce the swelling.
Well,
and they just knocked me on my ass. I mean, I've said before, I was always the guy back in the day, somebody passed a joint around in one toke, and I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I'm very susceptible to drugs. You know, I take one aspirin, my nose starts to bleed.
Yeah, well.
No, just kidding. Just
Georgia
kidding.
Georgia, with everything pollinating right now, I guess it's an added bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, I've been thinking for a while that Bush always says he's going to go down in the history books.
Yeah.
And he could solve global warming by inducing nuclear winter.
Yeah, well, that's one way to do it for sure.
Well, hey, say hi to Molly and Kathy. I love your show. I've been listening to you as long as I could. And you have a nice 4th of July, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Dave. Take care. Take care. God, I spent a lot of time in Dayton, Ohio. I spent a month one night at a bar there called The Dugout. Whew, Jesus. Well, anyway. The Dugout. I wonder if it's still... No, it couldn't have been. That was so long ago. So long ago. Where are we? Jaime is calling from Los Angeles, listening on the Internet. Jaime, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Okay, so then I was actually calling because I'm very much an Obama supporter.
Yeah?
And I'm gonna tell you why. I actually start medical school in a couple months, and it was quite a struggle for me to get funding, and I've never really had to struggle so hard to get school paid. And the grants administrator at the school told me that the reason why the feds aren't giving much money out to students is because the banks aren't lending to the feds, who then lend to us.
That's true. Yeah, I've heard that.
Okay, so there's one reason why McCain is not an option for me, and I just won't vote for him because I want to practice medicine, and this is the only way I can afford a medical school education.
I don't get the connection there exactly, Jaime.
Well, I don't.
Just because he's Republican.
I think McCain is going to do the same things that Bush does, and I think that the country and maybe even banks, will think the same and will keep continuing not to lend to the feds, who then lend to me.
What makes you think, and I'm just devil's advocating here, what makes you think that Barack Obama would or could change that? I'll give you a minute to think about it because I got to take a break here. I'll come back to you in a second, Jaime. Quick break. We'll be back. Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Think me dumb, you won't miss me. Well, you call me blue, green or red, this one thing, sure no mystery. Well, my hungry children, they must be fed. But I don't want your millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Will you give me back my job again?
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. All right, back to Jaime in Los Angeles. Where were we, Jaime? Oh, I asked you to consider that question, and then
I think that he
What makes you think he would or could, Obama?
I think he does have a lot of support, and I think part of what he's I myself am upset with what he's done in recently, right? And I look at him, and he's a constitutional scholar, and the way he's voting on the whole FISA bill, and it makes sense to me in one sense, and then on the other sense, I'm really upset with him. But I do think he's doing this to garner support, Like I think what he's doing right now is running in the general election, and he's trying to get as many votes as possible. And I do agree that he has massive support right now. I just don't know, and I worry that maybe he doesn't, and maybe this is what he's doing. I myself trust, I'm hoping to God that when he gets in as president, he does the right thing.
I think I understand you. What you're saying, I think, is that you figure he is doing the same thing Bush did when Bush ran in 1999. If you remember, Bush promised, among other things, never to get involved in the internal affairs, nation building in other countries. He promised all sorts of environmental protections. In other words, he was a complete liar. Now, he was lying from the side of evil. And I guess what you're saying is that Obama is lying or hedging the truth just to get in office, and then he'll pull the string on these bastards.
That's
the hope.
Maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part, right. But I have a hard time believing that Obama would do that to the people who supported him. And I think seriously that he's just running a general election campaign, and he's going to do things that are going to upset us all, and hopefully he will do the right thing once he's in office.
But the other thing too, Jaime, what can Obama do if the banks decide that they don't have the money, and that's more of an issue. They don't have the money to fund these government loan programs. How would Obama, tell them to do something that it would be impossible for them, or that would be their reply, to do unless he nationalized the banks?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't know enough about like how the banking world works. So
the whole financial world has its ass in a sling right now because, globally, among other things, the horrendous decline of the dollar, the con and the scam that was run on people with these phony ass mortgages that were bundled up and sliced into pieces and sold to investors all around the planet. I really do think that we are very close to a precipice here for a financial meltdown. So if there's no money available, or at least the banks say there's no money available.
Obama does have, and I guess I go by what I read on his pages and on what I've heard him say about education and how he stresses education. He himself is highly educated, and I feel like he has a much better understanding of economics than McCain. And
And
I feel like he has a plan to increase education from as early as childhood education to college. And I guess I just believe strongly that he's going to do the right thing at some, he really upsets me. And I hear you, what you're saying about him, about the appointment of Supreme Justices. But I don't know. I mean, if he starts, I think that Obama knows that if he appoints somebody that an Alita or whatever. Like, I think he knows that there goes Roe v. Wade, you know, and that there goes all these other things that are not just, you know, I don't know. I think that if you look at his record and you look at how he's supported different civil liberties, like, mm-hmm. and I think he understands that his next appointments need to be a little more progressive than the last two that you've just named. I don't know if you said Roberts or Alita.
I hear you, Jaime, loud and clear. And I've said before, and you know, you don't need to hear it from me, but as long as you have hope, as long as we have hope, you know, I know that sounds a little wishy-washy, but as long as we have hope, that is a pathway to try to solve some of this stuff. Once we get to the point where everything becomes hopeless, well, game over. Thanks, Jaime. I appreciate it. All right, we have a break coming here, and then we're going to take some more of your phone calls. This is phone call night. We have someone who's calling from Shanghai, China. Let's do Shanghai, China next. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Work left undone. When all that guards us is a single center line. And the brutal crossing over when it's time.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-five before the hour. Art is calling from Shanghai, China. Art, listening on the internet, I take it. Hi, Art.
Right. Hi. How are you? I was thinking about your HR 362. That the Congress, the Democratic congressmen, want to push through.
Right.
For that embargo. Enable a blockade of Iran?
Yes.
I'm wondering if that is more their way of taking some of the heat off from AIPAC by making them feel they're doing something rather than do nothing and risk having Bush do something unilaterally just to buy time until the election is over with. I'm trying to be optimistic here.
Well, I'm not getting the AIPAC reference. I think they.
Well,
they,
if the Israeli lobby wants this war or is pushing it for Israel, Israel wants us to knock out Iran. That's
right.
Pretty obvious. They're putting a lot of pressure. Bolton is going around saying, you know,
yeah.
Israel is going to hit Iran after November 4 if the U.S. doesn't do it before.
Right.
So I'm wondering if the move by the Democrats in Congress for the HR 362 is just a stopgap thing to make believe they're doing something to take the heat off.
Well, that's a possibility, but as you know, nothing in the Middle East in any aspect is ever what it appears to be on the surface. It's a land of mirages and genies.
Exactly.
And dust storms and swirling twirling dervishes. So nothing is ever as it seems, and I don't think that folks like you and I will ever know really what the tactical plan is or the strategic plan worked out between CIA and Mossad or the Israeli Defense Forces and the U.S. military. What we do know is that, because we are not stupid, what we do know is that some sort of mutual attack plan is in the works. And
yeah,
the only thing
about ad fentanyl going over there, right?
Well, I'm talking about everything. These resolutions that are wending their way with great support in the U.S. Congress through the both the House and the Senate. The Israeli Knesset's attitude toward Iran, and these reports from 23 U.S. intelligence agencies that say there is no nuclear program in Iran, hasn't been since 2003,
right,
is being
right.
used as so much bathroom tissue. These
Do you
people.
Think that the price of oil per barrel is already reflecting
yes.
a post-attack on Iran?
Oh,
and that's what all this is about?
I think at least 40 of the $140 is crisis money.
So that they built it into it. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm glad I'm sitting over here, like the guy in Los Angeles said, just sit back and eat the popcorn and watch the fireworks.
Oh, great. What are you doing in Shanghai, Art?
Exactly that. Avoiding seeing his mug on the face on TV. So I just hang out over here since... I was on the final recount in Miami in the 2000 election.
Yeah.
I saw how they stole the election the first time.
Right.
So I said, you know, a few years later, I just checked out and bought a condo in Shanghai. I said, I'm going to hang out over here until some sane regime comes back in power over there, you know?
And how are things in Shanghai? Can you breathe the air? I don't trust air I can't see.
Well, if when the wind blows 35 miles an hour the day before, on the next day it's nice and clear and sunny.
Right.
In between, I put in an air filtration system in my house.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I you know, it's not a problem.
As long as you don't go outside.
Well, you know, it's more hype than, you know, well, I'm on the coast here, so it's not that bad.
Right, right. Are you enjoying your stay in Shanghai?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean... I get to lose weight because I walk a lot. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't drive. I just walk and read, go to school, learn Chinese, stuff like that. You know?
How are you coming?
And,
how are you doing with the Chinese lessons?
Not too bad. Not too bad. You know?
Can you speak a little Chinese? I'd like to hear it with the Anglo Los Angeles accent. Or
well,
New York,
I'm not
New.
From Los Angeles. I'm from Brooklyn, actually.
Brooklyn. That's what I meant.
All right. Okay. For instance, when you see a nice girl, you go up there and you go, "Wo ai ni, wo xiang hong wei," huh? Next thing, they say, "I love you and I would like to take you with me."
And the next thing that happens, she pulls out her knife and says, "Ain chao hong wai gai yong," and stabs you in
well,
the ribs.
You know, when, actually, they're the ones who do the first move to begin with, but that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to relax, learn the culture. I met Iris Chang in West Palm Beach, bought her book on the Nanjing Massacre just 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I went to Nanjing, got to see the museum on that. So I've learned a lot of things about the history.
All right, one more question, and then I'll let you go. How did you hear about this program?
Hey, I've been following you for a few years. I mean, I talked to you once before when you were over at Air America a couple of years ago.
Oh, for when you were in Brooklyn?
No, I was... Not. I left Brooklyn when I was 13.
Oh, okay.
I was in Miami, and then I moved to Washington State because my wife needed a home dialysis program.
Yeah.
And the one in Florida kind of collapsed because we got bushed by two of them, you know?
Yeah.
So we went to Washington. She passed away last December.
I'm sorry.
And I just came back to Shanghai and stayed here instead.
Well, stay in touch, Art. You're a very interesting caller. I hope we hear from you again, okay?
Not a problem. Have a good day.
Okay. Well, okay. Thanks, Art. Take care. Take care. I guess Thursday over there? Friday over there? I don't know. Jeff is calling from Atlanta, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, what's up? I'm like you in the sense that I find it really perplexing that anybody is not being very vocal about impeachment, and if you're a congressperson, you would think they would be using every power they could to make that happen because of all the, you know, facts that are supposed to affect reality. That's why I'm of the opinion that Martin Luther King Jr. would, if he were alive and a senator or whoever, he would say, yeah, I'm going to be like Dennis Kucinich, and I'm going to help make this thing go forward if I can. And I don't think that even should be something we consider courageous, because it's not just a matter of justice. It's a matter of about getting them out of there before they, you know, attack Iran, make a dollar collapse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, why are we in the minority to say, yeah, Obama should get up there and say the Constitution compels me to invoke impeachment?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, right?
It's as simple as that, but it's got to come from Nancy Pelosi. She's the Speaker of the House. She's the one that makes that decision. And are you talking about after he becomes president?
Then, no, I mean, right now, anybody who has a podium.
Well, he could advocate for it, but he won't do that because, like so many candidates from the extreme right and from the not extreme left, that doesn't exist anymore. But as soon as these candidates get the nomination, especially the Democrats, they immediately try to make a move to the center, which is insane. This president and this Republican Party is going to, well, the president has, what, a 20%, 23% approval rating. Congress, the members of Congress have, what, 18% approval rating. This is not a time for a Democratic presidential nominee to be anything but kicking ass and taking names. And Barack Obama, all of a sudden, is not doing that. The primary is over. He's the expected nominee. And unless he's shot by some redneck right-wing freak, he's going to be the Democratic nominee for president. And so now that he's got the nomination, he's starting to move to the center. And this happens so many times. You know what Jim Hightower said one time, the Texas populist? He said, the only thing you find in the middle of the road is a yellow line and dead armadillos. And I think Barack Obama ought to pay attention to that and get the hell out of the middle of the road and start becoming a Democrat. But
you got to pick Hightower to be his press secretary. It's for real.
Yeah, he really should. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate you checking in, pal. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Oh, there, darling. How you feeling?
Spider bit. How are you feeling?
Well, hot and muggy.
Really?
The weather here.
I thought you lived in northwestern Indiana where it's always cool and breezes blowing in off of Lake Michigan. Not so, huh?
No. I don't know where you got that impression. In the summertime, it can get hotter than hell here.
Yeah, I know. I spent 3 summers there, and I regret every minute of it. Mm. But anyway,
you know, when you started the show tonight, talking about the wedded bliss, or maybe not so, of Madonna, I was going to run to the phone. I said, no, I'll wait. and find out whether or not you watched Inside Edition today.
Well, no, somebody sent me that email, Suzanne in Los Angeles, as a joke.
So, it wasn't no joke.
So, well, I know. I mean, she said it as a joke because something like that would never appear on this program unless I was high on antibiotics and steroids, which I am.
Are you talking about Madonna? Are you talking about what I'm talking about?
I'm talking about Madonna. What are you talking about?
There was another two items on Inside Edition today. I watch it because it comes on right after my soap.
Yeah.
It seems that these two couples, one couple, lady offered her husband 365 days in a row.
The sex thing. Yeah, let's have sex. Right, and they made it to what, 110 days?
No. Well, I don't know.
She was the Christian lady.
I don't know what her background was.
Right.
But then there was a second couple that only going for 101, and the looks on the husband.
Hold on a second, Marge. I got to do a break here. Hold on. I read about this someplace, and they both wrote books about it. They decided that the Christian fundamentalist woman decided that the way to really please God and her husband was to put out 365 days a year, and they made it so far, and then something broke. I'm not sure. We'll talk with Marge when we come back. This is Nova M Radio.
Powell likes a blonde that's stacked, and Rumsfeld wants his fanny smack. And Mr. Cheney, he gets quite a thrill if when you pop his cork, you shout, oil spill!
Ten before the hour. What the hell kind of music is that? Thanks to the crew, Ian Huffman, engineer, answered your calls, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, the podcast manager, manager, and of course, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Sharon Gordy, who contribute so much to this program. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. Back to Marge in sweltering Northwest Indiana, right?
I think that's...
Sweltering Northwest Indiana.
Did you push the button?
I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah, one of the fellows that was in the conversation had sort of a sheepish grin on his face, and it confessed that he had to have a little assistance from the little blue pill so to make it through the marathon.
Yeah, well.
Got to ask you a question. How far away are you from a place called Holly Springs, Georgia? Is that far away?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where it is. I've heard of it before, but yeah, quite a ways.
Well, you want me to
pick something up down there for you? Or
well, what? I was just going to caution you that when you drive through, you want to be sure that you're following the speed limit, because I heard tell that not only would you get a speeding ticket, but they'd assess you a fuel surcharge.
A fuel surcharge?
Mm-hmm. If the cops got to track you down, you get the speeding ticket, and then there's an extra charge because of the price of gas.
I'll be damned.
I had the radio on late last night. These water pills are a pain in the butt. Get up at all hours. That if you Google speeding /
Georgia.
No, fuel surcharge.
Yeah, okay.
Or some such.
Yeah.
That, you know, Holly Springs is not the only place that's doing it.
I wouldn't think so. It's, you know, speeding tickets really are...
And you're breaking the law.
Well, they're fundraising events.
You know, that too.
Yeah. Well, we have a thing here in the Atlanta area now. It's in the city, not out here where I live. In the city, they have cameras set up at busy intersections. And
oh, yeah. They got those everywhere. You go through a red light and you're nailed.
Bingo.
You get it in the mail.
Yeah.
And a wallet and wherever else.
Along with photographs of you breaking the law.
Mm-hmm. So, isn't that lovely?
Yeah, it's
modern
great.
Science, ain't it great?
When I was a kid, I hooked out of high school with a buddy, and we traveled through the South. And this is back in the day when they you stop at the Dairy Queen, and they had windows. One said colored, and the other one said white.
Oh, lovely!
Of course, I always thought that was referring to the ice cream. But at the time, there was a town in South Georgia called Ludowice, Georgia. It's still there, and it had an interesting stoplight. It was on the list of the auto club to stay away from Ludowice, Georgia. The only problem was Highway 301 went right through there, and that was a main north-south artery. There were not really that many interstates back then.
Oh, I think they had that on Channel 11 one time.
I'll bet they did. But you had to make a right turn in downtown Ludowice, Georgia to stay on 301, and you would sit there and wait, and the light would be red, mm-hmm. and finally it would... turn green, and as soon as you started to make your right turn, it'd go back red.
Mm-hmm.
And so technically you ran a red light. So the cops would be down there, the county and the little village police, and they would have people lined up sometimes 10, 15 cars at a time, just taking money hand over fist. And so when you talk about Holly Springs, hey, babe, been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
Well, yeah, you know, it's something I just heard, and I thought, well, shucks. You know, you got to pay $15 for the first bag,
yeah.
and $25 for the next one,
yeah.
and you know they have this one commercial on television where you put in a quarter to lower the blinds on the window, and you put in another quarter to push the seat back on the chair. And there was a editorial cartoon in the paper today. I think it was today. It was yesterday, where the pilot is saying, you know, takeoffs are free. But every landing is $50. Jeez, I'm telling you.
Oh, man, send me your water pills. All right, Marge, I got to go.
You be good.
I will. If I can't be good, I'll be consistent.
Be
all
careful.
Right?
And stay away from those damn spiders, would you?
I will.
All right.
Thanks, Marge. Thanks. If you can't be good, be consistent. Okay, what do we got here? We got 2 minutes to kill, and we don't have any phone calls. What the hell happened? What did I say something wrong?
Could you do me a favor and let me know what's going on with Ashley Simpson and the baby? Because I've been losing a lot of sleep.
I don't know who that is, and I can tell by the first name that I really don't want to know who it is. But all right, do we have anything important on the program anytime this week? Any guests or tomorrow night we have the Good Sound from the David Addington, the Gruesome Twosome appearance today.
Right, and apparently the quote Nadler questioning Addington about, you know, would it be okay for the president to order the torture of someone's child in front of them?
Up to and including crushing the little boy's testicles.
That was a question that had been posed to you like 3 or 4 years ago.
To me?
No, to you.
Oh, to you.
Who's on
John, you. Who's
exactly.
On, right.
No, but Addington said, I'm not here to answer legal questions. You have teams of lawyers who can do that for you.
Wouldn't you like to spend about 15 minutes in a soundproof room and a baseball bat.
Car battery.
And a car battery and some wires and John Yoo. Oh, my God, I said that now. Everybody's calling in. No, don't call in, folks, because we are literally coming up here on about 5 seconds more of filler. But thanks. I appreciate the rescue mission. We just... We let the...
Why'd you hang up on Marge?
I don't know.
Does she have to go to the bathroom?
Well, I don't know. Marge always makes me a little bit nervous. I'm afraid at some point Marge is going to unload with language that'll just, you know, she
just wants your job.
She has that potential to all of a sudden say, well, you know, these dirty mutt, you know. And, hey, thanks for participating tonight, True Seekers, however you did that. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.